No, it's not that kind of church. And I bet you couldn't figure out if it was the same person, the live one or the dead one talking. Well, everything is an opportunity for teaching. I still have four or five old guard people still here. Three, four, I lose count every day. I called about 8:15 because everyone was in a training session over at King's House 1. We're live now, I think you can figure that out, with one of the new outside engineers that we put on retainer. Not members of this church. I don't even want to hear him talk like a Christian. They're just engineers. That way I don't start over trying to save one, because I tried to save the last engineer I ever want to save, and then they already be saved by somebody else. So that's good. I don't want them here preaching. I don't want them here talking about dedication. I want paid whores and want to get what I pay for.
Yes, sir.
Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
That's the attitude I had when I came to town 28 years ago. I came to town 28 years ago swearing I'd never hire another Christian. I'm their boss when it's payday, and their pastor when they mess up. It's a double role I don't much relish. But it's my assignment, and I'm starting over with some young people and some new people. But monkey see, monkey do. I'm going to test all of you. How many of you have heard me say, right out here in front of the world to the new people that are coming in, if it's been done by those that were here, it's wrong? You heard me say that?
Yes, sir.
Now, that's a ludicrous overstatement, because it's designed to make people stop picking up their work habits by observation from those that have been here. And care what they're doing, no matter how routine it looks. Does Doc know that's what you're doing, or does Doc know that's the way you're doing it? And I think so, it's not going to fly. Because that's what's made it impossible for me to achieve two things. Once members of the old guard got into an irreplaceable position to where some part of this ministry depended upon them, and the price of them going was the collapse of a part of this ministry, they became a maximum target for the devil. And then I get into a catch-22 rescue mission. I have to find somebody that can make them not indispensable, so that the devil can't bring any part of the ministry down but bringing that one down, which, if I can do that, gives me and God a chance to maybe rescue those that have backslidden. But I cannot get the replacements, because the replacements spend more time with the old guard than they do with me. And they make that fatal mistake of assuming, well, they're doing it this way or doing that, so Doc must know, therefore it must be all right. No, it's not. Open the door, it's too hot in here. We're a very big organization. How could I know everything's going on? You get trust by giving it. I had to give trust to people who knew me. Knew what my expectations were. But had gotten in the habit of improvising and doing it their way and leaving me in the dark. And bad habits developed. Now, we have a program guide. They're supposed to follow the program guide unless they're told otherwise by someone representing me. Am I boring you?
Yes, sir.
Most people love to hear about trouble. It's their nature. And everyone was out of here today in a special training program with an outside engineer over at the truck, which is at King's House 1. And one of the newer people was doing the programming. And he's going to follow the guide. There was an old guard person here who knows better. When we don't have the quota by Wednesday noon, a policy has been laid down by me, and the crew that's normally here, at least I've made sure they know that. You don't follow the program guide come about noon on Wednesday. If the reservations are not in, I won't spoil you anymore. There is a war going on . The devil's not winning it, but he's making it a real battle. The cruelty of this congregation, who ends up by Friday or Saturday making the reservations, but will not do it before Wednesday noon. Who count on what you've had for years, 24-hour teaching. You can tune in and fill up like a free spiritual gas station. And I gave the orders in here, don't spoil these people by giving them teaching. Just throw the festival, the last festival we had, in their face until we get the reservations in. The consequences on the congregation, which I've said over and over again, it's not an ordinary church. You're here by God's selection. You either participate in what the teaching around the world is accomplishing and will stand with me and Paul and every participant in this message and receive equal reward. Like David said, those who stay with the stuff get an equal reward with those on the front line. But there's a contra occurrence. You become responsible. For someone out there, that if the program guide could be followed, would hear a message they may never again turn by the frequency and never have a chance to hear again. Because you will not be faithful and succumb to the devil's wishes, because he knows the stress and the effect of this war for the last 28 years, of voices of faith who will man the phone and seats on Sunday morning that testify to the worth of the message. People from Chile cannot come. You're here. The steps of a good man are ordered the Lord. You've been selected. Sorry. You're either the Lord's or you're not a Christian. You're in the line of fire. I said to some of my old guard staff members this week who let The transmitter went down. Our only backup transmitter for this ministry went down. Just about every person in this organization knew by 5:30 to 6:30 either night before last or whatever night it was. Oh, I know when it was. It was Monday night, 5:30 or 6 o'clock. And old guard members persuaded the new people they should not disturb me with that news until right now. We had no backup. We're having problems with the city power supply, with sudden power surges. We're dealing with the city. We even had them come out and put monitors on several that are in the grid, not us. We have no fluctuations. We're 24 hours a day the same thing. Like three cars going down, I told the city supervisor or administrator through my staff member, I said, if there's three cars go by and you don't know which one the radar gun picked up speeding, if one of the cars has got a governor on it, that ain't it. There are other people in the area that have sporadic needs of large power. For example, the meters today showed it dropping. I'll pick up artificial figures to just make an illustration. Should be at 120, let's say, dropping to 60. That's not the problem. It's a problem because it affects our power supply. But when these sporadic users, not fixed 24 hours a day like we are, turn off whatever drained the power, a surge of 220 hits our transmitters. Fried the wires, they burned through. And this time it destroyed certain elements within the transmitter, so we're functioning tonight without a backup transmitter. Last report I had, I don't know. Now, something could have happened since I got the report. My wife's been over there all day working with engineers trying to solve the problem. Old guard members habituated the new people with fear. And I said to them, some of the old guard members who knew, all the new people don't know how to get to me. So they got to the people that have daily access to me. Got to all of them. And they shut it off. And I said, what has killed the staff, killed the ministry, is people come to work like a survival game. They're not willing to run the risk of their nose being tweaked or their toes being stepped on or their pride being affected or getting chewed out or whatever. If we go to war in Iraq, what kind of success are we going to have if the soldiers are more concerned about avoiding risk than they are winning the battle? Avoiding risk to self. Self-preservation is part, like, give you the taxonomy. Self-continuity and self-preservation is part of life. It cannot become your reason for being in the Christian world. It is the reason for being as the product of progressive education in the world. You hear me preach it for 28 years. You're not a Christian if you can't digest Luke 14. Face it. Go find a church that will stroke you and send you to hell. You cannot be a Christian if you don't face Luke 14. Nothing can take preeminence to God, including yourself. And that is in the context of forsaking all to follow me, Jesus said. That means you've got to be moving on. You've got to follow him. And nothing can take precedence over that. You're the product of a generation where self-preservation and self-continuity is the reason for being. It's why courage is 90% of faith. If you're not willing to risk your pride, yourself, your feelings for the cause, you're not fit for the kingdom. So this ministry is put at risk with no backup for 24 hours. And with a right now, you ask the second question, what can Doc do about it right now? The phone call to San Diego and flying the engineer on retainer in, which is what I did as soon as I knew. Back to the programming. The old guard person here knew that I was coming here tonight to do a live program. I wouldn't do it until late because all the crew was tied up in the instructional section at King's House 1. And I would come here and do a live communion. And at the time, there was a possibility I'd be here as early as 9 to do a live communion. We're a little short of 100. That would be exactly. We're 82 reservations short of the quota. They've known that all day. Yet they punched the button and put up a communion at 8 o'clock. Instead of playing either Sunday afternoon or Sunday night, the way it was done Monday and Tuesday, where the message would end early enough in the 38th time for the appeal to be made for reservations. So I said, well, at least you can put up Sunday afternoon's live festival at 8:30. I didn't get here till shortly after 10. And I sat down and I said, what's going on? I'm listening to myself talk about the message you just heard. Well, I can tolerate that at 8:30, but not at 9 o'clock on when we're on 38. You didn't hear any message. I mean, we could have a retard, moronic congregation that would figure out real quickly. This has to be some kind of dated rerun, because we didn't hear any message. A little common sense would have gone past that. That's just the first few words that I said after the message as I bridged to live festival. I don't expect that. I said to the new guys who went out the other night who made a lot of mistakes on festival, no problem. As long as you take correction properly, I expect you to make mistakes. That's the learning experience. If what you did had been done with one of the old guard members, I'd be treating a little more severely. Because you reach a stage where it's not mistakes. It's deliberate. Don't care. God help us if attitudes that have pervaded my old guard, comfortable staff, went to an air traffic control center to try to handle the planes coming in. You can't do it if you're going to work like you drive a car with less than 5% of your brain engaged. Habitual performance. This is war. Then I'm told that they played the festival from 8:30 and it ran out, so they started the same festival over again. When they had Sunday night's festival that they could have played. And an old guard member who had already been addressed for not engaging her brain was here. Now, nobody's ever had the courage to do what I've done. What I've done is analogous to you cutting your own sons and daughters off. There are people that have been here for years that I really had a spiritual dream of raising up spiritual sons and daughters that could carry this ministry. Do I love them? Yeah. And that's enough. I come here after dealing with one of them that's still in an indispensable place, who went to King's House One today. My wife was in having a conference with somebody else in one of the offices over there. And two old guard members are walking toward the office. One of the new people did something for which anyone in tune would have said, hooray for you. Particularly after me saying what I said the other day, Sunday I think it was, Sunday or Sunday night, about the camera person that ran yanked a cap off us, one of the younger people, and said, you're going to learn some manners. One of the new people doing his job, as they were going to barge in. Now, they're old guard. I know what they were going to do. They were going to walk up and outside the door go, yodi, yodi, because they work around my house, and they don't round the corner and walk in on me. You know, I might be standing on my head nude. So the least they can do is stop around the corner and say, yodi, yodi. So I know this is seniority. We know what to do. And one of the new guys said, you can't go in there. Mrs. Scott's in there. And one of the old guard members said, so? I've said this congregation has not given me too much opportunity to show love in the last few years. Now, you know how fortunate you are. I'm still teaching and not in prison for multiple murders under justifiable homicide. When you love the church the way I love it and feel the calling I feel, you're looking at a pastor that's had to survive what can only be analogized to you watching somebody on a daily basis rape your wife and sodomize your kids. Oh, I've seen you sit up there. Spiritual discernment makes me tune in on that evaluative, judgmental attitude that this generation produces. Why doesn't he fire them? Doesn't deserve an answer. I've been trying to save them. Are they totally bad? No. Just like you. Difference is degree, not quality. Same reason you don't make reservations on Sunday afternoon or Sunday night? Me first. You see somebody else do it, you can see it in an instant. But when you're doing it, it's okay. Defensivism. Anybody that really cared would figure out, don't rerun this festival on a live time. You've already just played it, and you've got another one right behind it. The principle is play the two live festivals we've done this week until we get the reservations. That's the way we've been doing it. And the people that were over there training would have done it that way. The old guard person here intimidated the new person. He's one of the newer ones that just, you're going to punch the buttons and follow the program. You've got to care about this ministry. Like the old guard member, more interested in, who are you to tell me I can't? I know what to do. I'm going to do it right when I get to the door. That's the defense that he would give. And instead of saying, well, I repeat, hooray for you. Instead of recognizing that somebody is being trained right, how many in this room have fasted and prayed for me since I had cancer? How many have done it weekly? How many have fasted weekly? I'm going to fast the whole day. Just time out. Here's that tiger Paul writing the Ephesians about the warfare against principalities and powers, not flesh and blood. I emphasize, above all, the shield of faith. Tobacco is to be smoked, not eaten or chewed. Though some chew it. That I don't understand, but to each his own. Oh. Docs, healed, got a miracle. Don't worry about that anymore. Haven't I told you it's harder to keep a healing than to get one?
Yes, sir.
Haven't I told you we don't know how to abound as a congregation?
Yes, sir.
The eternal champions on snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. Too hot in here, Reggie. What's the point? That old tiger Paul went beyond above all the shield of faith. Then he talked about praying, all kinds of praying, and praying for everybody. And then this, almost unbelievable. And last of all, Paul said, pray for me. I'm the indestructible force that you believe needs no help. And if you slack off and your link in the chain, I'll will it through, faith it through, force it through. I think you know what it does to me when the reservations are not in by Wednesday noon, but you keep doing it. Why haven't you fired all these people 5 years ago? Same reason I haven't closed the gates or the door of the cathedral on Sunday, as you give me this fight every single week. Same reason God didn't wipe Israel out 3.5 days on the other side of the Red Sea. Delivered them from Egypt, parted the Red Sea, dancing with joy, and 3.5 days later, murmuring, complaining, belly aching. This is spiritual warfare. And every one of you listening to me know whether or not this week you've treated every single day as spiritual warfare, and whether or not you've treated the war as though it totally depended upon you. And if you haven't, you're human. That won't save you. If you're not in faith, yesterday's faith won't buy you a teaspoon of whatever is terra firma in heaven. You let yourself down, you let me down, you let God down. I'm tired of beating on you. When will we ever cross this hurdle where you will be decent enough to make your reservations by Wednesday? You that have had long experience with me have the measure of the good and the bad. You know the truth. You know when you got it coming. You take it on the chin, you get up, and for a little while do better. New people are coming every Sunday. And there's always some idiot performance by some of you old people that forces me to the tough love posture, and those that are only getting one glimpse think that's all there is. Jesus said, if you're not for me, you're against me. And you're not for me, you're not for God, and you're not for yourself, really. Because you won't make a commitment and stick to it. You won't be faithful. I'm not there yet. It's a verse or two down into the third chapter. Does our faithlessness render God unfaithful? No. But he does get fed up. We stand at the threshold of the greatest victories of this ministry. We're moving forward as best we can. If I look around here tonight, don't want the cameras on it. Many of you walked in, probably didn't notice the ceiling in the hallway. The stuff that's ripped off the walls as we're determined to bring this studio back to where it ought to be. I haven't got time to mess with your faithlessness and your inability to be counted on. 30 to 50 people keep us from victory every week. Now it's 82. It's getting late. Most of you have already checked out and gone to bed. That's my concern. I think people probably kept listening until 10 o'clock that had been watching the previous festival. Not sure whether I'd be here or not. But when it replayed, my guess is most of them went to some other channel. That's the consequences of mindless performance. It doesn't think through. And recognize this spoiled crowd I have. If the only time you could listen is a 2-hour program once a week, you'd be there. But because you've got 24 hours a day, you can tune in anytime you want to tune in. You pick the times at your convenience. That's fine. But in return, you owe at least faithfulness to Sunday morning here in Los Angeles at the cathedral. And you owe your commitment to these faith lines that you've made. Now get on the phone and make your reservations. Now, play 2 songs. We still have 82 to go, not a single reservation. I expected that. And most of my saints are tucked in for the night or off partying. But this festival will play. This is one festival that will just play round and round and round because I'm not referencing any message. And this is all that will play until the reservations are in. This is what you reduce. Here we are paying for 2 satellites 24 hours a day. Shortwave around the world, giving you 24-hour programming, and we have to be reduced each week down to half of the week, just rolling around the same festival. Shades of 28 years ago when I came here with the philosophy of giving that I have taught you, and after 28 years, I'm able finally to, I'll give you that. You've listened to that teaching, and I'm able to no longer be in the catch-22 of, we have a need. Those were days when people couldn't even send it in the mail. They had to bring it in by Friday for us to survive. And I had the catch-22. I knew this is not, you can't make God a beggar. You can't raise the money because God needs it. But I had a church that had lost faith, on the verge of bankruptcy, came to rescue it. So I went through the agony on a daily basis of having to step back a step to buy the time to gain another day, believing that the word would settle in and eventually people would give for right reasons, which you do. Now you're reducing me down to this begging stance with a cathedral like no other, a Bible display that is heralding what is written across the foyer, "Forever, O Lord, thy word is settled in heaven." Pouring my guts into bringing you new vistas into the Word, having to beg you to come. And what's worse, not beg you to come, watch you as an old guard congregation spit in my face, make my word of naught, like God repeatedly with the Israelites, telling them what he's going to do to them, and then postponing it and hoping another day. How can I abandon you completely, Ephraim? Because you figured out And you will force me to it until I shut the doors on a Sunday morning. You really think I won't? Just like those dumb Israelites didn't believe God wouldn't go with them the next day. They'd repented often enough that God would let them get away with it. And really, what they did at Kadesh Barnea was more justified than a lot of the other things they had done. But that was the one. Well, we're going to go anyway. You think they went anyway, really believing that God wouldn't go with them? Well, they believed it when they carted their dead back. He had forgiven them. He had cried wolf so many times they didn't really think the wolf was at the door. After 28 years, you reduced me to this. Reduce this ministry. Not most of those that are listening now. It's that 30 to 50 to 100 that do it to us every week. Oh, they show up on Sunday and they stand and they applaud and they go through all the gyrations. And they actually show up on Sunday. And I sit there and nod and let them in. They won't make the reservation by Wednesday noon. Oh, I can see the faces of you, Voice of Faith. You've all made reservations. The stress factor. Of loving someone and seeing them presumptuously count on that and abuse it. I'm going to be crude. The unfaithful husband finally gets caught and begs forgiveness. She tells him if he does it again, she'll leave him. He does it again and she doesn't leave him. Then he does it in your own house. You come home and find he's doing it in your bed with somebody else. Now he begs forgiveness. But you didn't leave him. You don't leave him. Then long he'll make you watch. That's what you're doing, is you make Christ an open shame through your pastor. That this ministry after 28 years has to go through this, because 30 to 50 people to a maximum of 100 cripple us every week. And I'm telling you, well, why don't I just narrow the quota? It wouldn't matter. If we held service in a phone booth that held three people, one of the three wouldn't make a reservation. Doesn't matter how. This is the battle line that the devil knows he can cripple most effectively, and you just kiss him every week. Now, most of the people listening to me are not guilty. These words will apply, as I'm forced now to play to this luxury crowd 24 hours, to where these remarks will hit the guilty people on the reruns. You're killing this ministry, and you're killing your pastor, and you're killing yourself eternally. That's such a little thing that could mean so much. You've kept this attack on me for 28 years. Why do you keep harping at it? I'll stop when you do it. It's just that simple. No reason to harp at you. You weren't guilty. You're guilty. Well, I'm getting lots of messages from people on my side that have made their reservations. Fine, I'm not talking to you. Unless there's been a few weeks where you've been guilty. This ought to be as automatic as a class showing up at school. Well, I don't see why it's so important that I make a reservation. I'm going to be there. Because of what it's doing to me. Considering what I put out on Sunday, I think it's a pretty small request that you make your reservation by Wednesday. You're a disgrace. Now, I'll play another song. I would guess by the time I go to the communion table in the next hour, we stay here till midnight to lay down a live festival that will now play around the clock. Maybe four or five people will call, drifting by or waking up and turn it on. Oh, he's live. Of course, because I'm wearing the same jacket, they may think it's what they saw at 8:30 or 9 o'clock. But I'm going to keep banging on you anyway. And this festival is going to keep playing, so get on the phone. Been here before. In fact, I got some messages tonight that indicate that some of this past teaching on this subject has been playing on the network. I really don't listen 24 hours a day. I approved programming a couple of weeks in advance, but I'm glad it's been playing. Ending the Ephesian letter, and I preached through Ephesians, remember? Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. Three different words used, all of which refer to a strength that can only come from Him. Doesn't say, finally, my brethren, be strong. I will give this to my old guard staff. When they got chastised after they made their excuses and explanations and painted the black gray and had to convince me that their intentions and motives were right, and they didn't want to do this or that, as if I'd keep them here if I thought they did. Pretty stupid, isn't it? Yes. What's that got to do with price tea in China? I want to tell your wife, I really do love you, and I didn't mean to be unfaithful, but this blonde went by. And I almost didn't fall for it. In fact, while I was doing it, before I finished, I was sorry I was doing it. See, we don't like those kinds of analogies. Let's keep Christianity nice little British debating type society. Well, as God condemned a hole in a holobar, the northern and southern kingdoms for running after what they were running after, calling both of these kingdoms women because they were his wives in the analogies he used, and they were being unfaithful to him, and he always went to that which is the most painful to human beings. Sexual infidelity that puts a scar that is never to be erased in a love relationship. He's even describing the private parts of the analogy that he's using of them running after the Assyrians, and describes the Assyrians, these women, Judah and Israel, not the women of Judah and Israel. He is characterizing both the kingdoms as his wives, unfaithful wives, and they're running after these Assyrians, and he's describing their private parts as comparable to that of an ass or a horse. Don't let anybody start getting the scrunchies about me using analogies like this. I'm just being godlike. You're just like the Israelites. It takes a lot to get your attention. No pun intended. I can always tell who are the newer ones here by how red their face gets. After they are chastised and do their repentance routine and exhaust all the little cue cards in the memory bank of what turns off the correction, then I'm going to do it. No, you're not. You're not the enemy. I'm not the enemy. Right here is going to be described the enemy. The difference is, I recognize it. My staff most of the time doesn't. And you as a congregation don't. Because you don't believe what I've been teaching you on this subject. You're too much the product of this generation. Be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. You can't get an aspirin-sized dose of that if you're on a self-preservation mode, a fear mode, and not a faith mode and a trusting mode. Sorry. It ain't available. If your mode of operation is me first, this strength and this power, which is in the Lord and in the power of His might, you ain't going to get. It's only there for faithers. And you can't be a faither and be unfaithful. There's enough teaching in Romans about righteousness being keeping covenant. Because you don't know who the true enemy is, you don't know how to resist the devil, and you don't have any of the right strength. Put on the whole armor of God. Not your armor, your excuse making, your explanations, your effort, your sacrifice, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities. Well, let's just stop with the first half. We wrestle not against flesh and blood. This war, to get you to be faithful, is not against you or your flesh and blood. It's against the devil, who preys on your flesh and blood and your natural instincts to look out for yourself, your fleshly bondage, your unwillingness to die a little bit every day. He preys on it. I seriously doubt that many people in my congregation got up this morning and prepared themselves for a wrestling match with the devil. Oh, if he came through your front door or your back door, as C.S. Lewis says in Screwtape Letters, looking like the devil of cartoon comics, you'd get up and attack him. But you don't see him. You find it hard to believe this is really true. You don't stop to think when you get up in the morning, in addition to whatever can have the quote on it personal to me that I deal with today, I'm a called child of the King. And I have a mission. I found a place that's given me life and direction and faith. And I owe a commitment with that part of my life that I have committed, and it's very small. Somebody just wrote in. There's 72 hours between Sunday morning and Wednesday noon. 72 hours in which we can tune in 24 hours a day and hear faithful teaching every time we need it. And we won't take 2 minutes out of 72 hours to make a faith commitment reservation. That's how ludicrous it is. That devil ain't going to come through your door and batter it down. He don't want you to know he's even working. He just finds all kinds of ways to keep you from doing faithfully that part of your life that belongs to the Lord in our joint activities to take his message out. And even to make it easier for me to deliver the message to you that you feed on anew every week. How often would you come to the cathedral if you didn't know whether I'd be there or not? Or you expect me to come without knowing whether you're going to be there or not? I don't have to go to the cathedral to preach. I don't even have to stay in Los Angeles to teach. I could sell the cathedral and turn it over, the proceeds over to a money management group. Not have to sell anything else. It would fund me to teach the rest of my life. And put a little click up there somewhere that says, program blacked out in your area. You don't understand who's really winning the battle. Well, you look out for yourself. Whatever pressure the devil's putting on you, he knows how to ease off on the pressure as long as you're going the wrong direction. Had some fool tell me on the phone, trying to encourage me, who's heard my preaching, after he spent an hour telling me how wonderful things were for him. And I told him of the calamities this past week. Well, that proves you must be doing it right, that the devil's fighting you that much. I said, well, you ought to be scared to death, since you've told me that you ain't having any battles. Oh, we love to apply the message everywhere else. But for we wrestle not against flesh and blood. who is more concerned than anyone else that you don't make the reservation and be at your post on Sunday? And who loses the most when you do it and you're there? God? Pretty rhetorical, isn't it? Who gains the most when you forfeit your responsibility, and who loses the most when you do it? Not even you. The devil. Against principalities. Arkos. Rulers of territories, just like the Prince of Persia. There's a prince assigned to the United States, and there's a prince assigned to California, and there's a prince assigned to Los Angeles. And there are some cities in this nation in which the move of God has been easier in its history, because somewhere back there, saints understood the battle, and like Michael and Gabriel, broke the grip of that prince. Satan does not have unlimited power. He has a hierarchy, he has more than any one of us are a match for, but he assigns them the way you would if you were him. He targets his best troops where the greatest damage is being done to him. And you've heard all this. Heard it ad infinitum. Face yourself. You do not believe it. Cerebrally, yes. Faithfully, no. You don't act on what you know. You don't really believe. Whatever else happens this week, I have laid one on the devil right in his kisser. When I make the reservation. And look at your mind. Well, what are you doing now? Using psychology on me? No, I'm using the Bible on you. You don't believe that, or you do it. So quit lying to yourself, as I preached in Romans. Quit using your brain to make black right. That's why I will not tolerate someone working for me in my presence making an excuse. You will not be allowed to save face because your soul is at stake. And saving face is saving the very face that needs to bow. It needs to be put under your foot until it finally and no longer rules you. A man without an ego is not worth being shot. Woman the same. I know how to train horses. The catch 22 is don't break the spirit of that horse, but bring it under. That's what God wants to do to you. An ego is a tool, just like a bicep on a right arm. You're to rule it. And in God's plan, let it be ruled where He said it was to be ruled. Including taking it on the chin and falling on your face as you hear this, if you are saints in this church, falling on your face and like David, crying out to God, against thee, O God, have I sinned. Because that's exactly what you've done, and quit lying to yourself. This is not about me and you. This is you and God and the devil. I'm just an instrument. Give way to the devil. You please him instead of God. to the metanoia occurring, you're ametanoia. You use your brain to make what you're doing not as bad as it is. In your eyes, in anybody else's eyes, you can somehow convince. We wrestle not against flesh and blood, against archos, rulers, personalities. And if the cause for the devil is big enough, it will be archos high in the hierarchy, powerful. I have a new man who worked for a long time as a volunteer down at the cathedral. He's now providing security in my yard. And I've been trying to tell him as I watch him stumble. You've not adjusted yourself to the demonic forces that are magnified as you get closer to me. And I'm not the demon. As important as the cathedral is, it can be shaken to the ground with an earthquake tonight. Everything in that building can be stolen, and the cathedral be no more, and this ministry can continue. If I go down, it won't. So, don't be stupid. The devil wants to bring me down. And that which is essential to me, those that are playing that role will be under a magnification of attack that cannot even be calculated by those that have drifted around on the fringe. That's why I bled inwardly, figuratively speaking, and cried and said, give it another day. As I've looked at Goonie Bird staff members who come in the flesh, I can do it. Not even conditioning themselves to the change of spiritual attack atmosphere as they get closer and closer to the heart of this ministry. And they come in like a goony bird with no spiritual preparation, fall on their face, and then crawl like a whining kid into the corner because they get their ass licked or whacked for something. This is war. It is not some PR campaign. Esther made herself up for a life and death decision. Not the kinds of times of encounter with the king in previous circumstances. The entire plan of God hung in the balance. She carefully walked around the king until this one, and she had to make the tough decision. If I perish, I perish. You don't believe it. Some of you listening to me will not believe. You got wrestled down by the devil. Archos. Through his assigned rulers. To scan this Los Angeles, whoever's over this Los Angeles area, is more interested in stopping you from supporting this ministry than anything else going on here. Forget it. I know it's a half hour. They don't need to do a station break in a half hour. Against powers. Normally that's dunamis. And dunamis can be an infusion of strength like the Old Testament word ooze. Wrongly used here to translate. Because it's not dunamis. It's exousios. Authorities, a personalized reference to a being, not flesh and blood, that has authority in areas, not geographic areas, but functional areas. To put a stop to certain activities within the principality or the domain of an assigned ruler. Against the rulers of the darkness of this world, rulers translates Cosmo Krateros. Same root in the Greek is Krakatau, or Tor, whatever it is, that movie where the biggest volcanic explosion. World rulers of the darkness of this world. Wherever the light of the Word is not ruling, there's darkness, and there's no gray. There's no neutral zone. Do we have freedom? Yeah. To choose whom we're going to serve. As the song says, you got to serve somebody. Most of you are still serving self and are fool enough and beguiled and deceived by the devil enough to think that when you serve self, you're serving self. No, you're not. You're serving the devil. Because he wins if he keeps you from serving the Lord. And to serve the Lord is to deny self for him. Oh, I've been surrounded for years with people that, well, I don't serve self. Correct them the first time and watch them give explanations. I am so tired of seeing people listen to me while I'm usually starting out very calm, just like you see me. You see me, I do it on TV. Had a cameraman the other night. It would have been over in 30 seconds, but he froze and started going into a self-protective mode. Once that locked in, it was Polly. As his pastor, either let him get away with it, so if necessary, I have to brutalize that ego out of the way. It's not a natural relationship in the Church of the Living God. Pastors are not bosses in the normal sense. The true pastor is assigned by God to watch for your souls. I don't have any megalomania tendencies. I don't even want this job. Just give me a closet somewhere with books. And, you know, I'd like Melissa to come in now once in a while. She brings me books. And reads with me. When you start giving those defenses and explanations, and I said, I've been watching it for years. I see people, I have this pain of spiritual discernment. I just see their eyeballs going around while they're holding with some kind of mental isometrics. At the first correction, they're waiting until I run down so they can tell me what they did that was almost right. Almost right. As a security person, I spent a laborious and kind way of saying, because I drive in and someone is working on a private road out in front of our house. And I spent a long time saying, you're new here. This is not like the cathedral where there's a public sidewalk where people walk up and down. This is a private road. Without permission, they're trespassing. Now, most of the world lets the world bully them. I have security. They had a duty. Somebody comes, hooks up something that's connected to our property. I don't care if they got Bell Telephone or DWP or anybody else on their truck. You don't do that at the White House. Oh, I'm from the DWP. Well, you know, that's damn wart piddlers as far as I'm concerned. What are you doing here? Who called you? Well, we're working on your phone line, yeah? Well, I pay a lot of money for that phone line, and ordinary courtesy would have you come up. We got 24-hour security here, and honk your horn and say, we want to notice you that we are working out here. That's what you're paid to do as security. Can't do that with a sidewalk down the cathedral where you'd worked before. It's a private place. There have been a lot of threats on my life. You only have to see movies to see that people can paint anything they want on a truck. We deal with management. They know better than to send somebody. Out of Silver Oaks. Fire inspector better not come in here like King Kong and say, I'm coming in. You ain't coming in without calling me. We don't have a fire here. Well, the code says doesn't. Oh, get off of it. I've been spending my life fighting for public law. There are certain federal rights. And I've been in the business for years of proving that certain local and you can sue people's tail off for under color of state law violating something that is protected by the federal constitution. That's what I've made a business of. I go to title companies. Well, you got to do thus and so. What are you talking about? I got to do thus and so. Read the code. I help write that code. Don't put your corporate law on a church. We got a section all around now. You know, most of the time, if people come and say, well, this is the law, how many forced entries have been with people coming, acting like they're a cop recently, that we read in the paper? Now, am I going to cause a civil war overnight, start a revolution over a utility truck stopped in front of my house and hooked up to my phone line running a big long... Look like a Chinese New Year dragon down inside hooking up to my phones? How do I know they're not tapping my phone lines? Well, I can't do that. You know, I live in a condominium. And well, that's fine, but I don't. There's an attorney sitting here. He's smiling. Ain't nobody. You ain't coming on my property without a reason. I didn't commit any crime. Well, we have our equipment on your property. We can enter any hour and get it. Try it. Make out a quick will, but try it. Well, we'll call the cops, and the cops will come and tell you, this is a civil matter. That's another subject. The point was, I'm very gentle in saying, I had to drive in and see the guy, and you can't even tell me what he's doing. Like today, I drove up. There was a taxi sitting in this private road. And some Persian talking to, I don't know what he was doing. It looked like he was taking a leak when I first came around the corner. But standing outside, the doors was half open, so I'm walking. My security doesn't, and they're hiding in the bushes looking at him from inside the gate. My wife and I are standing out there, and we say, "This is a private road. What are you doing here? You're not parked in front of any house. Just park where you can look through our fence. What are you doing here?" Well, the town car said they would be by in 15 minutes. What town car? Town car, who? Has one of these neighbors called you here? This is a private road. He gets on his radio, tries to ignore me, talking to dispatch. They say this is a private road. I said, "There's another street up there. You can go park up there." He wasn't waiting for anybody. He went up and turned left and went. Another strange car came and circled the area and went out and turned the same way. And my wife, bless her heart, she jumped in her car real quick and followed, and they disappeared. They weren't waiting for anybody. So I called security over and says, "Old guard." One of them's old guard. Because he's peering through the gate at me and my wife handling this problem. "Why don't you come out here?" Now watch. Here comes the defense. "Well, you walked by the gate, so I didn't want to run out and let the person know that you were identified with this house." "Well, why in the hell didn't you come out the gate and run up the street where he was? You didn't have to run toward us, because by then the taxi was gone. Why didn't you just come out and act like another outraged homeowner that's security for this area? And you didn't have to, an excuse." But that happened today. The other day I'm saying, when the guy with the Chinese dragon is invading our phone lines, I very carefully explained, you should have went out, been courteous, asked who called them and what they're doing, and if they have a legitimate reason for being there, then no problem. I could tell this new guy I'm trying to help didn't listen to me past the first sentence. He thought I was correcting him because he didn't notice the guy was out there. Never said that once. What I was correcting him for is that he didn't go out there, introduce himself as security, and ask what was going on. He didn't hear a word I said as I very carefully tried to lead him to an understanding of what his job was. He waited till I ran down. And I could see it. It's in his eyes. He had held this in his brain, waiting for his chance to say, "Well, I'm sorry, Pastor, because I should have, I noticed him out there, but I didn't tell the other security person." Are you following me? He had decided what I was correcting him for because he had a sense of guilt that he should have told the other security person. And therefore, everything I said, I might as well talk to the sparrows in the yard. He was waiting for me to get done so he could tell me, "Well, I did something. I noticed him. And what I did that he thought was wrong is not tell the other security person." I've had it with this. And so then the heat got up a little bit. "Why are you boring me with that? Is that an excuse? Is that an explanation? The bottom line is you didn't do your job. Why are you giving me an excuse?" Now they only want me to be pastor when I'm asked to forgive them.
They don't want me to be pastor when I lay the cleaver of verbal truth and make them face themselves that they're in a position of self-preservation.
You know how we get an army to fight? How many times you heard me say this? Drill sergeant goes down the row, knocks a hat off the soldier's head. Who put that hat on the ground, soldier? Don't say to that sergeant, "You did, sir." You reading me or not? That's self-preservation. Motive takes over. And when you walk in this door, approach the weak with your responsibility as a congregation to make reservations. You know, I hear echoes coming at me from the wall. I've said this so many times. I wonder if you're tuning me out like old guard staff members have because you've heard it so often. You find excuses for not being at your post. You find excuses. "Well, I'm sick on Monday. I've been sick Monday and Tuesday." What greater act of faith than to call and say, "I'm sick, and by faith I'll be there Sunday"? I'm your spiritual father. Children, don't provoke your fathers to wrath. Cosmokratos. If there's any ministry on this earth that has the General Schwarzkopf's, the Colin Powell's, when he was in the army, assigned to call the shots and lead the battle, it's this ministry. You're no match for them, folks. "Well, greater is he that's in it, he is in the world." Yeah, if he's in you. But he's not in you. If self-preservation is your mode of operation. Was him yesterday? Well, he ain't there today. You grieve the spirit away with your faithlessness. He's only there as long as faith's operating. "Against spiritual wickedness in high places." Oh, how the King James people made that sound highfalutin. Pneumatikos, spiritual. Hosts. In high places, you notice places is in italics. Not even there. In the air about us. I saw a movie once. What's his name? The movie star that's been very popular for years, drives race cars and makes salad dressing. Paul Newman. Once Upon a Great Notion, was it? It's one or the other, original title, or Don't Give an Inch. It's an excellent movie. A logging family up in Oregon or Washington. Henry Fonda was the old man, Paul Newman. Another guy was the two sons. There is a scene that's, in my judgment, Paul Newman's greatest acting performance, in which a tree fell, flood stage in a river, and his younger brother was, the tree fell on him and the river was rising, and as the current was flowing, the log was beginning to roll, and it was sucking his brother under with the log as it rolled under. And he's trying to get his brother loose, and he can't. And the camera work is on it even 20, 30, 40 years ago, however long it was. And you see Paul Newman desperately trying to free his brother Kent, and his brother is being slowly rolled, as the legs and lower body is caught with a log, and as it rolls, his brother's being brought until his head just above water, then his head goes underwater, and then Paul Newman goes down and tries to blow air in his mouth and keeps fighting, and he catches all the agony as he's trying to save his brother, and the log unceasingly but slowly is rolling. And then there's the last look as you're looking through the camera. You see through the water his brother's under water, and he releases the last bubbles and smiles at Paul Newman, and Paul Newman goes into a tortured agony that he couldn't save his brother. That's what goes through a true pastor's heart when he sees you start yielding to that which he knows will drag you under. I've lived with that agony as I've watched their pride and failure to recognize the true enemy and their determination to force sacrifice on God instead of obedience. Nothing I could do. You're doing the same to me as a congregation. We've been at this mountain too long. You've yielded to the devil too often. Because you won't make a commitment. My place is at the cathedral if I'm in Los Angeles on Sunday morning, and nothing will keep me from there if I can walk. And I will make my reservation in faith before Wednesday noon if I don't do anything else this week. And failure to do that you suck in. I've said it before. You want to tell me how 2,000 demons could dwell inside the body of a boy in the Gadarenes that couldn't have been more than 5'7"? You've got strange, non-biblical views of demon forces. Bodiless, invisible hosts in the air about us. You breathe in anthrax. You breathe in too much smog. You breathe in smoke. Third-party cigar smoke. You breathe in elements in the air that are invisible. You know what it can do to you. And you're too damned intractable in your stubborn, tradition-bound view of this generation to understand that when you break that covenant of faith with God, when you turn from he must increase, I must decrease, when you fail to recognize that you must forsake everything, including self, the next breath you breathe in these forces. And if there's a cloud around anybody, hosts in the air about us, the hierarchy, the cosmocratoros that's determined to bring this ministry down, put swarms of them, wherever you are, to make you the fool that you are every week in yielding to self and thus to the devil instead of doing your job for God. And you want me as your pastor to smile and sprinkle flowers on the water as it rolls you under? Love of self will take you to hell. All right, no more calls. We're going to the table of the Lord. You know, when we had guests from the denomination, I enjoyed having them. In fact, I was like a pleased spiritual father. I heard Don Arnold speak, and you remember, I was executive in that denomination for 17 years, 3 terms as president. They heard a lot of preaching from me. Every convention, I was the opening speaker. And I listened and thought, you know, they learned it well. When I first got involved with the denomination, they were still telling people to examine themselves before they took communion. They've asked me to come to Chicago and conduct a communion service at the International Convention next July, and I've tentatively said yes. It would require, I think it's a Sunday after 4th July, it would require a remote service from Chicago, unless the communion service is early enough I can jet my way here, and I don't think it will be. But it's nice to see the fruit of the Word. And Don made an important distinction. Remember, he said there's a difference between healing and a miracle. Miracle is someone that born blind, lost an eye, and it's miraculously put back. Someone in a paraplegic who's restored to full movement. A limb missing that grows back. Healing is a slow and continuous process. You remember when the widow with the issue of blood, or the woman with the issue of blood, touched the hem of his garment, pressed through the crowd. She had to be crawling to touch the hem of his garment. When she went away and the exchange occurred, and his disciples gave stupid responses when he said, "Who touched me?" I felt strength go from me. He called to her and said, in essence, you know, remember this, thy faith has made thee whole. I've told you it's harder to keep a healing than it is to get one. As you know, I was one of the first consultants brought in, wrote the original statement of purpose for Oral Roberts University and helped him get it going. And at least he was decent enough some months back to say on the telephone there wouldn't be an Oral Roberts University without him for Gene Scott. Well, there wouldn't have been one without Oral either, but I was there and made a contribution of direction and planning and helped him get a faculty, because nobody, he was a healing evangelist and he had no credibility in the minds of academics that he would actually build a university. And I was able to be probably the primary person of that gave credibility to motivate faculty members to come and join, which is why I said to him when he came he could not make his abundant life doctrine required. He could preach it. He was the brightest light on campus, but he couldn't require it and build a university. University's diversity and oneness. Now, I was a cheerleader saying your evangelistic association exists to follow you as you follow Christ and to push your ministry. And so for that reason, since its purpose is different than the university, you have to keep the structure separate and the personnel separate. And when he then broke those two covenants with me, I left the same day. But I've always spoke respectfully of Oral Roberts. My dad was very close to some of the early healing evangelists, Voice of Healing people. Do I believe that genuine miracles occur in services like the current front runner, Benny Hinn? Yeah. I believe genuine miracles occur because God honors faith wherever He finds it. And in an atmosphere that builds momentum and people come with expectancy and they come with faith, in that atmosphere their spirits of faith are lifted to the amen level, as I've defined those levels of faith in the words of the Old Testament. And that level of faith produces results. But as all the news studies, and the same was true of Oral Roberts and others, as the news media try to find follow-up, they find enough illustrations. They tend to focus on that, but they find enough illustrations of people that die of the same disease a little later. And in the HBO special in which I commented many months ago, I have this knack of siding with people for principle. I remember when we were having our freedom rallies, when I said the head of the devil church in San Francisco could come and sit on the platform as we fought for the freedom to have our own views and then go out in the street and debate our individual differences. I was criticized by some. The issue was constitutional freedom for all and the price of freedom's association with nuts. I have no sympathy for the media that finds ways to make all Christianity look bad. But I remember in an interview, Benny Hinn was asked why people that are testifying to healing on his platform later have the same disease. Benny's answer was, I don't know. I can do better than that. I know. Paul ended his life saying, I've fought a good fight. I've kept the faith. I've finished my course. Faith is a mental kind of isometrics and a commitment of action and sustained action. And I think I have told you many, many times, I'm not one of those preachers that says, I'm up here, and I don't have any of the problems you have. I can't maintain the intensity of amenness in all areas of my spiritual life and all the time in any area. There are certain paths I've followed with God where He has come through so many times my consistent level of faith approaches that which I have about gravity. But in most areas of life where the billows, sea billows roll, you can't maintain the same focus. I'm flipping the page from what I was teaching on in the earlier part of this festival. You don't maintain an awareness of God. You don't maintain an awareness of the devil. You don't maintain an awareness that you must be endued with His strength and in the power of His might, which only comes as a gift when you're faithing and is never there when you're serving self and violating a faithful commitment. It's never there when you're lying to yourself to excuse some failure to be up to par. I'm like God, I think, in this, and I'm glad God is like this. He doesn't compare us horizontally. That's the legalistic system. The vertical relationship, one-on-one with each of us, with God. And I think I can say this, I'm like God in that with my employees. Those that are committed to be here because they care for this ministry and want to be a part of it. I'm not judging them by John versus Pete. It's John versus what John can be. And not John having to be perfect, but truly getting up and pointing the right direction every time he falls down instead of learning how to act like he's pointing the right direction. Now, God's like that with us. And the reason that I go to the table of the Lord is I know why these people lose their healing. They leave that atmosphere, and their faith was dependent upon that atmosphere. Now, if it's a miracle, it's a miracle, and it's done with. I mean, if you didn't have an arm and God put one on you, I haven't seen that yet. But I believe God can do it, yeah. I mean, you don't have to work to believe you got the arm. You wake up and it's there. But a virus. I do not believe that all... I make it very clear. I don't believe that anybody's sick because you sinned. The only place I can find that in the Christian life in the Bible is when you don't discern the elements properly, and you partake of these elements and fail to benefit from the act of remembering what the Lord did because you don't discern His body. You don't understand and stop and think, this is what He really did, and it's available for me. And to get your attention, God gives you a temporary punishment, which is defined as sick and weak, and some die from it. And if you discern His body properly as we partake, you don't have to have that, which is done with God's approval to give you cream, a temporary punishment, to avoid katakrama, which is the ultimate punishment that is described at the end of the chapter in 1 Corinthians 11, which falls on the world that opposes God. That the thing I quarrel about with my congregation is when you're sick, you'll come to the miracle service. If you're getting brains. When you're well, you won't come. Because when you're well, you don't need it. And you can't seem to understand that all sickness came because of Adam and Eve's sin. There wouldn't be any sickness in this earth. God didn't create Adam and Eve to be sick. They were in association with the source of life. They were created to be immortal. Any biochemist will tell you that our body basically is designed to constantly reproduce itself, the cell structure. The immune system loses the battle with forces against life. When Adam and Eve sinned, they were denied access to the source of life, separated, no longer being able or having the capacity to relate to the source of life, except through the vicarious sacrifice at a set time and a set place, pointing to the day that relationship with God could be restored through what Christ would do. And there'd be no sickness on this earth if Adam and Eve hadn't sinned. And Satan became the prince of the power of the air. We still don't know what a virus is, really. It's like the atom that once couldn't be divided. Now we're down to quarks and all these other things and some basic soup from which the smallest elements, as we now can define them, leap out seemingly spontaneously. All that's going on in each of us. I don't know where demons come from. I have my own theory. That when those sons of God, angelic beings, mated with women on earth and produced the vile creatures, and God had to destroy the earth, those that were the offspring of the combination of the fallen angels and human women, had two natures, had the eternal, unkillable, angelic reality, and the flesh died, leaving this host of bodiless demons. Demons are not the same as fallen angels. Angels have form. These are bodiless evil spirits that when Jesus cast them out of that boy of the Gadarenes, begged not to be sent to the abyss, is the word in the Greek. The same abyss translated bottomless pit in Revelation, from which they will be released during the tribulation. They begged not to be sent there. There are God knows how many chained there. There's those terrible demons described in the Mesopotamian area that are turned loose during the tribulation. And then there's these bodiless demons that have to have a body here and want to be put in the pigs rather than sent to the abyss. Vital, bodiless, evil spirits in the air about us. Only with the armor of God, and the might of God, and the strength of God in you, can they be held off. You lose the Spirit of God in you, every breath you breathe sucks them in. There's going to dwell in you, they're not going to bother anything, as long as you don't go toward God. That's their goal. Keep God from rescuing you and convince you that you don't need to be rescued and you've got to protect yourself, that you're the master of your own destiny. No, you're not. You choose your master. It's the only choice you got. But they go into these atmospheres and they get a healing. Viruses, cancer cells. How many times have I told you? Every man in this room has prostate cancer several times during every day. Every man sitting here has got prostate cancer. Every man and woman sitting in this room has got cancer. But the cancer cells are kept under and defeated by your immune system, which is a system of living cells, programmed in your genetic makeup to attack and recognize these intrusive elements. The prince of the power of the air rides on those things. And to stay healthy, which is what Jesus purchased for us at Calvary, you've got to make your whole life what Paul said, a good fight of faith. That's why the Shalom service and the miracle service, as we once called it, is my choice of mode. I don't heal anybody. I know all the other doors of healing. I am as authorized as any minister of God to anoint with oil, lay hands on the sick, pray the prayer of faith, do all the other doors that makes you dependent for healing upon that moment. And when you leave that moment, Satan's minions will seek to, however, subdue, break, remove that faith intensity that got you your healing. And if it's dependent upon something you can't go to, you can't follow the healer around everywhere, your faith level will go down because it's dependent on that atmosphere, and you will lose your healing. That's why we go to the table of the Lord in your home. But the intensity with which you go, the regularity with which you go, this network tries to serve that purpose by having communion throughout the day and hundreds of teaching lessons on what these elements mean. I notice in my own life, you let the flu season come and the first achy feeling come, man, I'm going to go at these elements with an intensity not there when I'm riding my bike in the sunshine and not even thinking about being sick, getting ready for more miles to tell the devil I'm not dead yet. I want you to understand, faith has to be maintained. And faith cometh by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. And we are at war, and the devil wants you and I to not finish our course. At Calvary, not only were our sins covered, and with the sins of omission and commission that we all do every day, you need to come to this cup with new intensity every day. If you're truly marching toward God, more frequent will be the cry of Psalm 51, "Against thee, O God, have I sinned. But he stepped in my place and died for the sins I committed today as well as the ones I committed in the past and the ones I'll commit tomorrow, and I'm not presumptuous about it. I want to lift this cup on a daily basis and say, thank you, Lord, for your grace. I'm made worthy by the blood of the Lamb." I'm made whole. Thy faith hath made thee whole. Her faith was in him. She didn't understand what we now know. He would take all sicknesses on himself, lift them up and carry them away. Sicknesses, pains. He would suffer the course, and as Isaiah 53 says, the Lord made him to be acquainted with sickness. Just as we can say, he that knew no sin took our sins. He that knew no sickness was made to be acquainted with sickness, that he might bear it. And the chastisement of our wholeness, our well-being, was upon him. And tonight, I claim it for me, and you claim it for you. with his stripes I was healed.